right, good morning to another set of students. We'll get started with our last two cases today. Case number five is Childs versus Webster. We have, I have Becca Steinberg. There you are. Okay, you're right at the podium already. Go ahead, Ms. Steinberg.
May it please the court, Becca Steinberg for Appellant Sharif Childs. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a vote.
It's fine.
Mr. Childs is a Muslim and so must pray at certain times every day. Because he's incarcerated, Mr. Childs can't go outside to see the sun and can't use the internet to look up prayer schedules. Restrictions on movement and internet access are, of course, a normal part of being in prison. But because these restrictions substantially burden Mr. Childs' ability to pray, the prison itself has an obligation to remove that burden. One way it could do so is by providing prayer schedules. That's what many prisons in Wisconsin do. But here, the prison provided Mr. Childs with inaccurate schedules, causing him to pray early, outside the window where his prayers would be accepted. And when he asked for corrected schedules, prison officials retaliated and withheld those schedules altogether. In the absence of sufficiently compelling reasons for these actions, the prison's conduct violated both the Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act and the First Amendment. I want to start with a substantial burden analysis. Here, there's no question that Mr. Childs commits a major sin when he prays outside the designated window. That's exactly what the inaccurate schedules caused him to do. And when he didn't have a schedule at all, which was the case for all of 2023, there was no way for him to know whether or not he was praying within the window, causing him to commit.
Why couldn't he ask his imam for schedules?
So he was ultimately able to get schedules after this lawsuit was filed from a visiting imam. But for all of 2023, he had to go without scheduling.
My question is, why couldn't he ask his imam for accurate schedules at any time?
Because he was incarcerated.
Yes, but the prison makes religious leaders available.
There's no evidence in the record that suggests that a religious leader...
No evidence in the record that Muslim inmates had access to an imam?
Not one that would be able to provide him with prayer schedules. And in fact, what happened here is that...
It's pretty well understood that access to a religious leader is one of the basic requirements. Are you saying that Wisconsin violates that requirement?
No, Your Honor, but there's nothing in the record suggesting that any imam was able to provide him with schedules. And in fact, the Muslim leader at the neighboring prison told him to just accept the inaccurate schedule, saying that it wouldn't be a problem. But in fact, was a problem for Mr. Childs because of his religious beliefs that are personal to him, that he needs to pray right when the window opens.
Does the fact that he received a schedule affect his claim for injunctive relief?
No, Your Honor. So at the time that the lawsuit was filed, he did not have a schedule, so he had standing. The only question is whether that created mootness. And as appellees acknowledge on page 25 of their brief, it didn't create mootness. And in part because of the uncertainty about, this is footnote 8 of their brief, in part because of the uncertainty about the continued viability of getting them from the visiting imam, as well as the fact that it's the prison's obligation itself under the act to remove the barrier, something that they didn't do here. But going back to the issue about whether or not he was able to get schedules, what happened is that the Muslim chaplain at the other, and this was Coat, at the other prison said that he could just pray 3 to 5 minutes late. But there's record evidence showing that the schedule was up to 14 minutes late, and so that he was committing a major sin. Now, at this point, the prison's main rejoinder to whether or not there was a substantial burden is just that this was a religious accessory or a devotional accessory. That's not the case here, because what Mr. Childs seeks is the information contained within the prayer schedule. It's not that they have to physically give him anything. They could equally comply with their obligations by, for example, posting a copy of the schedule in the chapel, or even doing something simpler, like allowing him to see the schedule they already had posted in the unit to provide Ramadan meals, but simply didn't allow him to see. There's.
Well, meals are different because the prison has to feed the inmates. And if
Yes.
inmates have special dietary restrictions for religious purposes, then there's an obligation to provide an appropriate diet under the statutory provisions at issue here, or guarantees at issue here. But this is different. This is and not something the prison would ordinarily have any obligation to provide.
So it is true, right, that there are a series of religious food cases, but and I want to answer your question in two ways, Judge Sykes. The first is to distinguish sort of ceremonial foods like game meat on certain holidays or other ceremonial foods from the regular dietary diet, like a vegan diet or a kosher or halal diet. Certainly, the prison has an obligation to provide with everyday food, but they don't have to provide birthday cake, for example, to celebrate non-religious holidays. What the Act says is that religion has to be treated differently. And the Act also says that prisons have an obligation to incur certain costs in order to ensure that. And the second response I want to give to your question, Judge Sykes, about what's going on here is the reason it matters that the prison itself had the schedule already available to him is twofold, or already available, just not to him, is twofold. First, it shows that to the extent that they're trying to rationalize by saying that it's a cost issue, there's simply not a cost issue when it's already posted in the unit, just in a place that's
Would a
inaccessible.
prison have an obligation under either the statute or the Constitution to furnish a rosary to a Christian inmate or a yarmulke to a Jewish inmate?
So the rosary issue was at issue in Ortiz, and in Ortiz, the court held that Mr. Ortiz stated a claim when he said that there wasn't a rosary provided to him. So the answer to that question, Judge Easterbrook, is yes. Just like they would have an obligation to provide someone with a woman inmate who wouldn't wear pants with an
With
appropriate.
what? I'm sorry.
A female inmate, for example, whose religion kept her from wearing pants with a jumpsuit dress, as many prisons already do. The other analogy, though, that I think is quite apt is consider a prisoner who's in solitary confinement and so not able to use the normal mechanisms to tell even what day it is, right? In that case, if the prisoner didn't have any way of knowing whether it was Yom Kippur so that they could fast, or knowing that it was Easter so that they could pray, certainly the prison would have an obligation to tell them what day those things happened on. The same thing is true equally here, no less because it has to do with a specific time than that it has to do with a specific day, like the.
Would granting child's claim here lead to a slippery slope where prisons would be required for any inmate's sincerely held religious belief that anytime they need an item of worship, they get it? And how does that juxtapose with the Supreme Court's decision in Cutter?
No, Your Honor, it wouldn't. And I want to answer that in three parts. First, I would point to page 36 of the appellee brief, where they say that there is, quote, no record evidence, end quote, about the cost here. So even if it could somehow lead to the slippery slope argument, it's the prison's obligation to actually put forward evidence in that, as this court recognized in Schlemm, Penn Site 365, Coger, Penn Site 800, that the prison actually has an obligation to prove that slippery slope argument, not just to allege it here. Second, to the extent that the prison is trying to prove that, they can't do so on the first time on appeal. This was not raised in the district court. And the third thing, Judge Brennan, that I want to go back to is that your question was about this being a devotional accessory. But as I mentioned here, it's not a devotional accessory at all. That is, there's not a physical thing that they have to hand him in order to comply with this.
So truly, it's one step away from a devotional accessory, in
Exactly.
the sense of it aids the devotion, but not necessarily the purpose of it's behind the timing versus the actual devotion.
Exactly, Your Honor. So, for example, let's say there were mass services at 11 a.m. every day, but the prison left the inmate with no way to know when it was 11 a.m. because they hid all of the clocks. Certainly, it's not enough to tell the inmates that mass starts at 11. You have to have some way for an inmate to be able to tell when 11 o'clock takes place, presumably by making clocks available. The same thing is true in this case here. And so I'd like to now move on to the prison's justification. As I was just speaking about with Judge Brennan, it is the prison's obligation to actually meet their, to show that their justification is accurate. And this court has not credited the prison's obligation if it's inconsistent with their practice. So for example, here, the prison had been providing Mr. Childs with a schedule until he complained about it being inaccurate. And this is JA 117 paragraph 10, the Jackson Declaration. Mr. Jackson had been incarcerated for over 30 years and never previously been denied a schedule. In fact, here there's an express causal link between Mr. Childs's complaint and the retaliation of not providing the schedule. For that, I would point to JA 122 to 123, paragraphs 29 to 30, which is after Childs brought the issue to Lindgren's attention. That was when Lindgren said he wouldn't provide any more schedules, and Moore stated expressly that Lindgren told him not to provide any more schedules at this point. So a reasonable jury could draw the inference that the reason for withholding the schedules is retaliatory. And a retaliatory reason is not a legitimate penological interest as required under Turner, nor is it a compelling interest as required by the statute itself. If there are no further questions at this time, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Roth.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Assistant Attorney General Colin Roth on behalf of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections appellees. This case asks whether prisons must entangle themselves with inmates' religious practices by procuring devotional accessories for them at state expense. Courts uniformly answer no for good reason. The Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act and the Free Exercise Clause aim at removing state-imposed barriers to religious practice. And so they require only that prisons allow inmates to obtain religious items on their own. The Wisconsin Department of Corrections does just that. Its policy allows that. And this clear rule keeps prisons out of the error-prone business of procuring religious items for a religiously diverse prison population.
What about Ms. Steinberg's argument that it's not actually a religious item, but just a timing, like a calendar?
Well, right. So two responses to that. The timing, there's no allegation here that Mr. Childs was unable to tell what time it was. This would be a different case, perhaps, if he were in solitary confinement and could never see what time of day it was and thus could not determine what time to pray. But there's no indication that he just never knew what time it was. What he wants is information. And I find this to be an even more remarkable proposition, that the state now has an obligation to essentially instruct its inmates, like Mr. Childs, Muslim inmates, about what times they must pray. That is essentially the rule that the appellant is asking for here. And I think that extends far beyond prayer times. Imagine the Lord's Prayer, the Nicene Creed. The Catholics have an obligation or a right to come to prison officials and ask them for a copy of these prayers so they can do them properly. I don't think so. Courts have been very consistent, and we cite a number of cases in our brief, both at page 21, pages 33 to 34, where courts have uniformly declined to say that prisons have a duty to supply holy books to their inmates, the Quran, the Holy Bible, etc. And I think if that's true, it's hard for me to understand why a prayer schedule would somehow fall into a different territory. And I think the simplest way to resolve this case is to simply look at the text of the Act. It's very, very clear. It says, quote, the Act, quote, does not create a right of any person to receive government funding for a religious activity. And I think that's precisely what they're asking for here. That's what Cutter recognized when it says the Act does not require a state to pay for an inmate's devotional accessories. I don't think that principle is in dispute. Under the Free Exercise Clause, and we'll even set aside Smith for the sake of argument, you know, I think that also defeats their claim. Chief Justice Berger back in Cruz, I think this is a very sort of sensible statement that sort of underlines the principle here. There cannot possibly be any constitutional or legal requirement that the government provide materials to inmates for every religion and sect practiced in this diverse country. At most, religious materials cannot be denied to prisoners if someone offers to supply them. And that's exactly what's going on here. You can see that distinction reflected in many of the cases where it's true if a prison sets a bar and says, no, you may not possess a rosary, or you may not possess a copy of your holy text, that absolutely can, in circumstances, support a claim. Now, there's exceptions, perhaps, for security. We have to look at the circumstances. But generally, there can be a problem if the prison says, no, you may not possess this item. But the cases, this case is very much the opposite. The prison has said, you may possess the calendar. There's no dispute the Department of Corrections policy allows for that. You can see that in the appendix. It's appendix 89, I believe, is the Department of Corrections policy, which expressly calls out religious calendars. And that is enunciated specifically in the policy. Mr. Childs knew he could order a calendar. There's also an email from the prison chaplain to Mr. Childs informing him that's at appendix 148. It says, Mr. Childs, you may order a calendar if you want, but we're not going to supply one to you. So he knew he could order one. He was allowed to order one. There's absolutely no evidence of indigency or anything else that may excuse his inability to do so. So we think this is ultimately a simple case. It simply cannot be the rule that prisons have to provide either religious items or information. I think another way to look at this issue is the Establishment Clause. I mean, we have serious entanglement problems when the government gets in the business of teaching people how to practice their own religion. That's what I hear the rule that the appellant is asking for. I think the Supreme Court would say governments don't have a duty to do that, to teach people how to practice their religions.
So twice you've used the word teach. What about the word permit?
Well, he's absolutely permitted to practice his religion. He can pray whenever he wants. There's no information in the record that suggests otherwise. Again, what he wants is for the state to inform him of his religious duties. When do I have to pray?
Isn't that overstatement? I don't hear them saying, yes, the prison is going to tell him how to be a good Muslim. That's not it. He's asking to be a good Muslim. I've got to do certain things. It's required 5 times a day. These are the times. There's a problem if I don't have the time. That's far different than instruction by the prison as to how to be a good Muslim.
Well, I think he's asking the prison to tell him when. I mean, he is. He's asking the prison to tell him when he has to pray. Imagine the content of the prayers. I mean, if we don't have to supply him with the Quran.
I can't see that. The schedule doesn't say you must pray at particular times. The schedule he wants identifies particular times of the day, and he can then do what he wants with those times of the day. He could, he could kneel facing west rather than facing Mecca. He could do what he wants. All he wants is to know times of the day.
Well, I think it's more than that, Judge Easterbrook. It's not any times of the day. It has to be times of the day that
he
comply
wants to know
with the Muslim
particular
faith.
Times of the day. That's clear.
Right. He wants,
but he doesn't want a document saying you should pray at the following 5 times.
Well, I think the embedded in that premise, however, is the times of day have religious significance for Muslims. We absolutely acknowledge that. And so what he wants to know are which times.
Suppose
of
he asked for a prayer mat.
Sorry?
Suppose he asked for a prayer mat and says a good Muslim does not kneel straight on the floor, but on a prayer mat. And you provide mats to other inmates. I just want a prayer mat, and I will figure out how to use it.
Well, he's absolutely entitled to what other inmates get. We would not take the position that religious practice can be discriminated against in the prisons. And so he's, of course, entitled to what everyone else is entitled. If he thinks he needs something special, a unique kind of prayer mat, again, the case is hold this again and again, Your Honor. I implore you, if you every single circuit that's considered this, every district court has said prayer mats, prayer oils, holy texts, religious apparel, yarmulkes, you know, anything like that. I am not aware of a single case in this country that has ever held that a prison has an affirmative obligation to purchase that for an inmate. Again, what prisons—
I take it then that you're saying that Ortiz is not such a case.
No, Your Honor. I think if you read Ortiz carefully, including the appellant's brief.
Reading Ortiz carefully is a good way to be confused.
Fair enough, but I think if you read the appellant's brief in Ortiz, the premise of the appeal...
All I want to do is read the opinion. I don't want to read the appellant's brief in Ortiz.
Sure. So I have...
The legislative history of our opinions? Oh, dear.
I read Ortiz to say, look, what the district court misconstrued my complaint to be saying the prison had an obligation to supply me with this item. And that misconstrued the complaint. How the district court should have read the complaint, I assume it was a pro se complaint, is that he was prohibited from obtaining that item. And Ortiz said, if we give that permissive and an indulgent reading to the pro se complaint, we'll let this survive. I believe it was a pleading stage case, may even have been a screening stage decision. And so it was giving him a generous read of his complaint, but I think it sets up the exact dichotomy that we're relying on here, which is, again, if there's a barrier.
Ortiz was dismissed at the screening stage.
Correct.
Before there was even an answer.
That's right. And so, Your Honor, again, at the screening stage, and a pro se complaint, I think what this court was doing was saying, we will generously read the complaint to be alleging what actually can be a problem, and that is denials of access when you are barred from possessing something. And so on that basis, we'll let the claim proceed. And again, that was exactly the premise on which the appellant argued the case. He said, you should construe my complaint to be more broad than that. So I don't think Ortiz at all stands for the proposition that we have an affirmative obligation. Again, I think it's really all you need to do is go back to the text of the statute. It couldn't be more clear that people don't have a right to receive government funding for religious activity. I think that resolves the case.
On the Section 1983 claim, how do you read Smith in this context? Obviously, Smith's become a criticized decision. Obviously, we're still bound by it. Act seems to go away from that in the prison context. What's your argument as to what our standard should be on that claim?
Well, on the free exercise claim, right, there is a question about Smith. Multiple circuits have debated its applicability in this context. I would point you, we said in a brief, the Firewalker Fields case from the Fourth Circuit from just 2 years ago, which I think is a very nice distillation and unification of the different doctrine in this area. It says, first, we look at Smith. Has there been a discriminatory application in the prison context? If so, we don't proceed to strict scrutiny. Instead, we proceed to the more lenient Turner standards, which I think makes a lot of sense here, frankly. I mean, there are oftentimes good reasons why religious practice might be treated differently in prison. And if we always impose strict scrutiny on those types of distinctions, I think we'd be in a lot of trouble. So I think the Fourth Circuit has the right approach. That said, I don't need to hang my hat on Smith. I understand it may be on the way out. So you can absolutely resolve this question on substantial burden grounds on the same basis that you resolve the RLUIPA claim. I think both parties acknowledge that the substantial burden analysis is essentially the same under both. And so they fail at the threshold step. We cite many, many cases again in our brief that parallel the act cases.
Really simple.
And similarly find that the free exercise clause is not unique in that it does not impose this kind of affirmative obligation that that Mr. Childs is seeking. So with that, I yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you. Ms. Steinberg.
I'd like to make 2 points, Your Honors. The first is that this is not a devotional accessory. That's true for two reasons. The first is about timing. He just wants to know what time the window's open. And the second is that we're not asking for the prison to provide him with anything. They could just as easily meet their obligations by hosting the schedule in the chapel, again, not giving Mr. Childs anything himself, or by letting him see the schedules that they already had available for the provision of Ramadan meals. There's nothing that he needs to be provided with, so it's not a devotional accessory. Now, the appellee's focus on the text.
Have there been any similar cases about the devotional schedules, like what is the time of Lourdes and what is the time of Matin?
No, Your Honor, we're not familiar with those cases.
Huh.
It's
puzzling that it would be only Muslims. right? There are many, many other faiths, including my reference was to Roman Catholicism, where times of day matter to the correct prayers.
Yes, Jana, and we think it's quite telling that what happened here is that the schedule had previously been provided to Mr. Childs. So it's possible that those cases haven't arisen because, as was the case here before Mr. Childs complained and asked for corrected schedules, it's not a real burden on the prisons to actually just give them either three double-sided sheets of paper a year or make accessible to them information that the prison itself already has. And it's telling that Appellees focusing on the text of ARLUPA, or of the Act, I'm sorry, just miss, sort of don't read the entirety of the provision that it is that they cite. So 42 USC section 2000CC-3C, of course it says that it doesn't create a right to receive government funding for a religious activity, but it continues to say this chapter may require a government to incur expenses in its own operations to avoid imposing a substantial burden on religious exercise. There are lots of things that prisons do that apply to all prisoners, like prohibiting congregation or saying that a prisoner can't choose what they eat, that the prison has to make an exception for when it burdens a person's religious beliefs. They say that he can pray whenever he wants, but what he wants to do is pray during the windows. And for all of 2023, Mr. Childs didn't have access to that information. The second point that I want to make on rebuttal is
Has he produced evidence at summary judgment that he didn't have any other way of procuring this information himself? I thought there really wasn't any evidence in the record of that.
He says that he wasn't able to have these schedules for all of 2023. A reasonable jury could infer, all we're asking for is fact finding, a reasonable jury could infer that it wasn't possible based on how central he states that it was to his belief.
Well, no, not the centrality of this practice, but whether there were other options for obtaining the information about the time of day.
Yeah, so there's the evidence.
For example, from an imam, as later a volunteer stepped up and provided this information.
Yes, but there's evidence in the record, his own testimony, that he wasn't able to get that for 2023.
Is it just that categorical statement, or did he?
Yeah,
is there more evidence of that he tried to get the information elsewhere, or that he continues to try to get the information elsewhere and cannot for the prospective claim?
I see my time is expired. May I answer the question?
Yes.
So we think that a jury could infer that he tried from two facts that are in the record. The first is that he said he did not have it in all of 2023. And the second is that he was subsequently able, which suggests the jury could infer that he was trying. I would ask the court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.